The Guardian.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. This week, while Westminster slumbers, we give it a break and cast our eyes across the Atlantic to where the political action is just getting going.
Congratulations to Rick Santorum. This has been a great victory for him and for his effort. He's worked very hard in Iowa. We also feel it's been a great victory for us here. For Ron Paul as well. Ron Paul's had a great night.
Mitt Romney there, celebrating success of a sort. But does the mere 8-vote margin of victory in the Iowa caucus really put him on track for the Republican nomination? Or is the former Massachusetts governor destined to remain the man whom the Republicans refuse to love? And will it be Rick Santorum who pushed him to that Iowan dead heat, who instead seizes the chance to take on Barack Obama in November? Joining us in the studio, we have The Guardian's Martin Kettle and Jonathan Friedland, and down the line is Susan Goldenberg from The Guardian's Washington Bureau. A warm welcome to you all. Now let's start then with last night's result in Iowa, the first chance for the Republican voters to choose their presidential candidate. More than 122,000 votes were cast in all, and cast in quite an unusual way, Martin. The frontrunner Mitt Romney only just squeaked past the former Senator Rick Santorum. Martin, could you just give us a quick lowdown on the numbers?
Yeah, about 120,000 votes were cast in the Iowa caucuses. The result was that Romney won by an absolute squeaker of 8 votes. He took just under 25% of the vote, Santorum right behind him on the same figure. Ron Paul came in a good third with 21% of the vote, and then Newt Gingrich, 13%, Rick Perry, 10%, and Michelle Bachmann, who, if you remember, won the very first contest in Iowa a few months ago, the straw poll in Ames. She came in with just 5%.
So she really has crashed and burns. We'll turn back to the losers in a minute. But Susie, first, most of us haven't heard a great deal of Rick Santorum until Rupert Murdoch was tweeting about him at the turn of the year. What do we know about him? Is he a serious contender?
Well, he's being taken seriously by social conservatives because of his hard line on the issues of abortion and against gay marriage. He opposes abortion at all times, and he's been a very hardline opponent against gay marriage. In fact, that's the roots of his campaign in Iowa. He went out to Iowa a couple of years back after the state opened up to gay marriage to really campaign hard against it, to demand that judges be removed who, you know, legalized gay marriage. And so he really resonates with that part of the Republican Party who are very conservative on social issues. He has another string to his bow, though, and that's his sort of working class credentials, if you like, which he's been playing up. He's a grandson of a coal miner. He comes from a state, Pennsylvania, which is part of the industrial Midwestern heartland or pretty close to it. In terms of his political resume, he served in Congress, both in the House and in the Senate. But he suffered a terrible defeat there in 2006, lost by double-digit margins. And until last night, he really was wandering in the political wilderness.
So he's done something here in pulling back to dead heat with the front runner Mitt Romney, Johnny. But it sounds, from what Susie was saying there, like possibly a bit of a one-issue campaign on gay marriage in an idiosyncratic state where it's not a primary. You vote in this unusual way by going to a meeting and you've got to sit it out for a couple of hours. So is it a bellwether or not?
Well, I wonder. I think Iowa deserves to lose in a way. It's sort of first in the nation status because it often gets it wrong. It often votes for people who then go nowhere. So Mike Huckabee was the winner of the Republican caucuses there 4 years ago and went not really much further. You know, people remember going back to 1988, Reverend Pat Robertson came very strong second, again, not really a serious candidate for the presidency. It is just so atypical, overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly, you know, among Republicans anyway, socially conservative, a lot of evangelical Christians, etc. So it just is odd, really, that it is this has this status of picking, you know, future presidents. And as I say, it has a rather patchy track record. So you do think wonder, you know, as big numbers like this for Rick Santorum, how sort of warping this is of the longer race, because I'm one of those people who really doubts whether Santorum's appeal can travel beyond a sort of unusual, atypical state like Iowa. I don't know. I mean, we'll find out, and that's going to be the big question of the coming sort of coming weeks. He is Rick Santorum. You know, you can see why he would be appealing to some of those conservatives for all the reasons Susie's mentioned. Ultra conservative socially, you know, compared homosexuality to bestiality, said, you know, at one point, I don't just take the pledge, I take the bullets. You know, he's this very aggressive social conservative. Does he have appeal that travels beyond a place like Iowa, where he was basically living for the last several years? He campaigned so frenetically there. So I just don't know. And I think that'll be a big question. But once again, I think there's a question mark over Iowa's ability to pick winners.
It might be an odd state. It might not be a typical state, Martin, but these things, there are dynamics here which have real importance, aren't there? And as we move now towards New Hampshire, which is the next point on the whistle-stop tour, the big question, I suppose, is whether Mitt Romney, who's clearly there and clearly going to continue to attract significant support, will see those who are against him coalesce around one other figure.
Well, that is the question. I think Romney has got the best funded and the best embedded campaign in several of the states which make up the race to the nomination. He is clearly the front runner, as you say. It was very lucky for him that he won, I think, in Iowa. If he'd lost by the amount, even by the amount that he won by, right, I think he would have begun to look a bit of a non-sell. It's a bit odd this year for the reasons Johnny said. Iowa can't really be counted on to you know, shape the race. I suspect that may be true in New Hampshire next week too, because for the paradoxical reason that Romney looks set to win it and win it quite easily. And if he does that, I think that would probably be a misrepresentation of the electoral mood of the Republican Party and of Republican voters too, possibly. So I think the later primaries, the one in South Carolina on the 21st of January, and then the Florida primary on the 31st of January, I think loom very large as the events which will decide the two big questions for the Republican Party. First of all, who is the not Mitt Romney candidate who emerges on top of the pile of contenders for that title? And second, whether the Republican Party can learn to love Mitt Romney at all? And these are the two questions which I think over the next few weeks we're going to learn the answers to. It's a party which is very divided, very different in different parts of the country, going through a cultural revolution of its own, and these things are going to be difficult to predict. So it's going to be a very interesting race, and I don't think what happens in New Hampshire is going to settle it any more than what happened in Iowa has settled it.
A long way to go, Martin, but just on New Hampshire, I mean, it's part of New England, and Massachusetts' former governor might therefore sort of see it as their patch. But doesn't it also have this reputation, live free or die, is their state slogan? Can we assume that voters in New Hampshire will be on the more moderate end of the Republican spectrum?
They're a mixture. New Hampshire is, I mean, all states in the United States have their own characteristics. New Hampshire is a traditionally Republican state in a region which is traditionally more Democratic, by and large, and in the case of Massachusetts, neighbouring Massachusetts. Most of the voters in New Hampshire live in the south of the state, in places like Manchester, the state capital, and Nashua, towns like that, towns which all of us who have covered the New Hampshire primary love and visit once every 4 years with great pleasure. And it's all very compact, and it's also all very close to Boston. So a lot of these people commute into Boston or into the greater Boston area. So that is in some ways atypical as well. So, you know, what happens in New Hampshire will matter because every contest matters. It's a bit like the start of a football season, I think, you know, where the early games, they all count in the end, but they're not necessarily a true guide to what happens once you get down to the wire.
Now, Susie, listening to these two here, looking at it from this side of the Atlantic, it sounds like there's this weird dynamic where you've got one obvious candidate who's kind of doing relatively well, won the first early race, likely to win the next one, well-funded, could go all the way, Mitt Romney. And opinion polls suggest that he'd give Barack Obama at the least a good run for his money. Why is the Republican Party dithering so before endorsing him?
It's really a battle between their hearts and their heads. You know, when I was in Iowa for the last debate and talking to people and talking to evangelicals, you know, why isn't Rick Santorum taking off? Because he wasn't at that point. And they said, look, we like him and we just don't think he's electable. All the conventional wisdom tells you that Romney is electable. You know, he's managed to get elected as a Republican in a Democratic state. He's got business experience, which will count for a lot in a time of economic crisis. He's got a squeaky clean family image, and he's telegenic, and he's smart, and he's disciplined. He does not make mistakes. Now, all of that is probably why people can't love him, because there's something just so manufactured about him that he's just been plugging away at trying to get the nomination really since his last run in 2004. That's all he's been doing, and he just can't make people like him. And he's very cautious, doesn't go out say anything that isn't off a teleprompter, and he is willing to adjust his political positions for whatever climate he needs to. So for an example, when he was governor of Massachusetts, he was quite moderate on issues. He actually invented, or he didn't invent, but he brought universal health care to his state, which, you know, should be seen as an achievement. Now he's had to disavow that among the conservatives of the Republican Party. He has changed his opinion on issues like abortion, which are like a red rag to Republican conservatives. So that sort of wishy-washiness or flip-flopping on political positions plus this air of artificiality about him makes him really hard to love.
So the, what the Americans sometimes call the character thing, you're talking about there. And Johnny's also a Mormon.
Well, not his character. His character is the character thing is a flaw in you know, Newt Gingrich and other candidates. He's a flip-flopper and he's fake.
Well, I watched Romney campaign last time around, you know, where he actually managed to get no more votes, or actually slightly roughly the same number of votes in Iowa that he got this time. And I was really struck then watching him. What Susie says about him is right. On paper, the CV is so impressive, you know, fantastic business record, the man who turned around the ailing Salt Lake City Winter Olympics and elected as governor in a harsh environment in a way for Republicans. In Massachusetts, you'd think he'd be just the perfect presidential candidate, almost as if like the Manchurian candidate, you know, developed in a laboratory or something for this race, you know, from including the white gleaming teeth and the blonde wife and the handsome children, etc. But I watched him campaign. He reminded me of two people, both Democrats, actually, who similarly had the perfect CV for a would-be president and also could not make the voters love them. And those are Al Gore and John Kerry. You know, in both ways, he had some of that sort of wooden quality, just couldn't. No spontaneity, a lack of human warmth, even if there was, in particularly in the Al Gore case, you know, the squeaky clean then family image. So he had that problem. And the Kerry thing I felt there was a real echo of, specifically in Iowa. And I looked at some of the polling yesterday out of the results, and it said there was a very high number of people, I think a fifth of Republicans, who said the most important factor for them in deciding who to back was electability. And of those, Romney stormed them. I mean, it was something like 21% of Republicans said electability is most important for me, and those people went for Romney. Now, exactly the same dynamic happened in 2004 among Democrats in Iowa when they went for John Kerry. They thought he's electable, and therefore we're going to vote for him. Now, there's a problem with that, which is when voters feel like, I don't really like him very much, but I think the guy next door will, that never really gels or takes off. You know, Democrats couldn't warm to Kerry, but they thought the voters out there will like him. And in the end, voters out there felt the same way that Democrats did. They also didn't warm to him. And similarly with Gore. So I think, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who, just as Susie says, they're voting with their heads, not their hearts. They don't love Romney, but they think the country will like him. I think that's a very weak basis for a candidate. And what I would worry about if I was a Republican is I would think yet again, just like in 2008, they're going to be saddled with a nominee. Then it was John McCain, now it's Mitt Romney, who they themselves aren't in love with and aren't very excited by. And in a funny way, the country sort of picks up on that and they don't get excited either.
I agree with all of that. And I think just one thing to add is In American presidential elections, the decisive electorate are not the people who are already registered to vote Republican or Democrat. It's the independents. They actually are numerically a larger slice of the American electorate than either of the registered electorates of the two main parties. And these independents, who went very heavily for Obama in 2008 and then abandoned the Democrats in 2010 in the midterms, are, you know, the people who will decide presidential election in November of this year. And I think Romney may not really cut it with them in the way that some of the more outlandish to us candidates, I'm not saying Santorum here, might do, because independents are independents not because they want to split the difference, but because they think of themselves as independent of the parties.
And they want to seem like a politician, maybe.
That's right. I mean, so they I think, are looking for a candidate who may not be on offer, except conceivably in the shape of either Obama, if he reinvents his appeal of 2008, or someone we haven't really thought of yet, possibly a third-party candidate. And I don't think that has yet been fully ruled out. You know, in the big picture, I think Romney may not have that appeal which Johnny was talking about. I think he's right on that.
Now, Susie, let's just quickly work our way through the rest of the list, apart from Romney and Santorum now. Ron Paul finished quite strongly, and however strange he might be, he certainly has something that Martin was talking about there, which is that he doesn't look like a calculating machine. He has these eccentric positions and he's stuck by them.
That's true, but he has an upper limit of ceiling, and I think he has reached it. There's a segment to the Republican Party that likes his libertarian stance, you know, on the economy, hands-off an economy, and that does like his no wars, no foreign wars stance. But a lot of the rest of the Republicans, especially in the contest coming ahead, like in South Carolina, where there's a heavy military presence, are not going to like his position on Iran, you know, which is basically Ahmadinejad is a nice guy, or that's the way Republicans are portraying it. So I think he's gone about as far as he can go. He represents a strain of thought in the party, but I don't think he is enough there to really make him the winner of his contest.
So if he'd landed a shock victory, that would be one thing, but he didn't in Iowa.
Things get really complicated by Florida, because by then you need lots and lots of money to run an advertising campaign. It's not just about enthusiasm, it's about organization and cash, and he doesn't have that.
Okay, so he's a strand, but he's not going to be overpowering. And then moving further down the list, Newt Gingrich, not a new name, someone who's been around for 20 years or more on the world stage, and someone who only a matter of weeks ago was suddenly being talked up as the man of the moment. What happened to him?
Well, I think he had his moment in the sun like everywhere else. He, and like Rick Santorum now, Newt was the anti-Romney for a little bit. He was the anti-Romney a little bit too soon. And then it's one thing to be the anti-Romney and have people look at you for that. It's another thing to have people look for you for what you are. And once people looked at Newt Gingrich long enough, they saw the flaws in him. And not just from his past, but from the way he conducted this campaign, which was petulant and undisciplined. And, you know, I think he's just on his way out. And his speech after the caucuses was really bad-tempered. He's a poor loser. And he's over.
I think that's right, Susie. I agree with that. But, you know, he is rooted politically in the South. He is a Georgia congressman historically. South Carolina, he's always paid the bills for the military. He's a big pro-military man. So, I mean, he may do well enough even now in South Carolina, where for a while he was on top of the polls. I'm not sure if he still is. But, I mean, he may do well enough to wound Romney and keep the contest going, it seems to me. I mean, maybe he's just going to plummet. But I agree, he's not going to...
Only 10 days more. The money has stopped coming in for him, and I think, you know, and he hasn't built an organization.
Okay, well, so he's looking very wobbly. But, Johnny, bottom of the poll yesterday were Michelle Bachmann and Mr. Perry from Texas. They really are over now, aren't they?
I really think they are. I mean, this is the first US election of any kind I've followed largely on Twitter. This was new for me. And my favourite tweet of the night was David Corn, who from Mother Jones magazine, I think. But he did a very funny tweet in which he said, Michelle Bachmann, paging Michelle Bachmann, that's Dancing with the Stars for you on line two, the equivalent of Strictly Come Dancing, saying that Michelle Bachmann, that's where she's going next, you know, into that kind of celebrity twilight
like
zone.
George Galloway on the Big Brother house.
Exactly, or Anne Widdecombe, something like that. So, you know, that's where she's headed. So she really is over, I think. And then Rick Perry saying already that he's going back to Texas to reassess his campaign. That's always the precursor for an announcement of a withdrawal. I mean, he proves that, you know, it is possible to be too dumb to be president and just flamed out because of that catastrophic debate performance where he couldn't remember his own policy.
He was going to abolish bits of government, but he couldn't.
And he couldn't remember really remember and he tried fatally. It's a wonderful thing to watch because he tries again and again to remember it rather than just moving on. Classic example of being in the hole and digging, you know, does it again and again, tries to remember the three agencies. And he even ended up doing TV ads, sending himself up for not remembering it. I mean, that's how bad it became. And just mistake after mistake, you know, when he said the really good thing about getting oil from Canada is it means we don't have to rely on foreign oil imports. And somebody needed to point out to him that Canada is, in fact, a foreign country. But it goes to the point that Martin was making about South Carolina. It's not only that the Republicans are looking for an ABR candidate, anyone but Romney, which obviously they do need, but there isn't yet, and that's why I think Martin was referring to Newt Gingrich, but there isn't yet what often happens, and it looms very large in the politics of both parties, but a Southern candidate. I mean, that's, you know, very often successful political candidates from George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Lyndon Johnson, are from the South. And I think some of the Republicans, especially conservative ones, did think Rick Perry was going to be that. He fitted the bill, the Texas governor. Somebody like him, again on paper, should have been strong in South Carolina. He flamed out. Newt, you know, it's a bit desperate to look at him as a sort of Southern candidate, but there's nobody else. Rick Santorum, yes, conservative, but he's from Pennsylvania. He's from the North, a Catholic rather than an evangelical Protestant. So they don't really have the kind of candidate that normally, if you're a South Carolina voter, you'd be very comfortable with. You don't really have that in this race. And I think that's the big gap. And that's, you know, they did in the end, at least John McCain was from Arizona. You know, they did have somebody. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're very uncomfortable and still casting around while the race has already begun.
Just throw another name out there we haven't mentioned yet. And he could have his little 15 minutes of fame and people paying attention to him. And that's John Huntsman, who's the seventh man in the race or seventh person in the race, who's been campaigning almost wholeheartedly in New Hampshire. And if he manages to pull out a miracle and do, you know, register, you know, a close second or defeat Romney or come up, you know, sort of knock Santorum off, we could be looking at him.
Oh, right. So there's still
a distant possibility.
And I agree, it's right to mention the name, because I think it's fair to say if the Republican Party was a kind of functional, regular party, John Huntsman would have been a front runner. Phenomenal CV, you know, Mandarin speaking, twice re-elected governor with massive margins in Utah. Just a very plausible, cerebral kind of guy. He should have been. But, people said he just didn't have enough crazy for this field and therefore didn't get anywhere. And so, you know, a pizza magnate like Herman Cain was polling 10-1 proportionally compared to Huntsman, who really, you know, former ambassador to China, etc., should have been plausible. And it's quite interesting, a lot of the Republican commentary at David Frum and Andrew Sullivan, people like them, were really talking up Huntsman. And it just shows you how far the Republican Party have moved from, you know, the sort of politics perhaps people in Europe would recognise, that somebody like Huntsman just, you know, couldn't get arrested in this race. But we're absolutely right to mention him, because by any normal standards, he should be a very serious candidate.
So looking ahead now to the bigger picture, which is the vote in November against Barack Obama. Whichever of these guys wins in the end, Martin, they are a disadvantage as soon as it comes to the general election, because they're not dealing with a normal political party behind them then, in terms of appealing to the middle ground.
Well, I think by the time you get to a presidential election, I mean, you're into two rival personal campaigns, and the party side of it is not necessarily as dominant as we Europeans, who are party animals, might think. everything we have been saying has been pointing to the fact that Romney is going to stumble over the line as the unloved nominee of the Republican Party when they have their convention, which I think is in Florida, in fact, isn't it? In the summer. Now, I think equally, because Romney does not command his party, because he does not speak for that party, and because Obama presides over an economy in crisis, and because voters across the world tend not to like incumbents in times like this, the way is open for a third-party candidate if one can emerge. And I just think we ain't seen nothing yet. I just think there is the big drama in this year's presidential election is somewhere else. And I'm not sure how it will come, and I'm not going to commit myself to a name, but I just think it's there for the taking.
I think Martin's onto something here. Second time he's mentioned it, and I think he won't regret mentioning this. I think there's just something about this which is right, and it's very irrational reason I'm going to give to you for why I think he might be right. And that is, Obama, unlucky as president, has been a habitually lucky candidate. Luck has broken his way. Go back through his primary races for the Senate and everything. Always a freak luck, a stroke of luck has seen him home. And nothing would be luckier for Obama than a third party candidate broadly from the right who splits the Republican vote. It happened to another lucky politician, Bill Clinton, with Ross Perot in 92, and again actually in 96, but crucially in 92. And I think you just feel that the way the kind of drama gods in the sky are scripting this race, and yet again incredible drama with a photo finish in Iowa, you just feel that's exactly the twist in the script that would help Obama. Best of all for him would be some completely unelectable Republican. But if you have the vote split and there's a third-party candidate who siphons off 7, 8, 12% from an unloved Romney, as Martin says, that would absolutely do it. And you just feel for that very irrational, superstitious reason, you just kind of feel that's where there's some other shoe to drop in this story, and it will be one that favours Obama.
And Susie, can we just have a final word from you on the Democratic side of the aisle? Many liberals and progressives who supported Obama are now kind of bitterly disappointed with how much business as usual there has been, and yet he's running a candidacy seemingly unchallenged for his re-election. Are you expecting that there'll be a kind of irritant on the left emerge at some point to challenge him and deal with all the despondent hopefuls of 2008?
I think in a sense it has, and in the Occupy movement, and I think you've seen Obama react to that. I think Occupy, actually, in a way, is going to serve as a third candidate and help Obama. It'll make it more acceptable for him to take on populist positions, ones that he's been hesitant and afraid of doing. It will sort of really highlight Mitt Romney's background, which, yes, he's a businessman, and yes, he's got business expertise, but really, he grew up in privilege, and he built his business career laying people off and putting people out of work. And you can already begin to see that the sort of campaign around Obama beginning to think, okay, let's put him out there to make one really strong barn burner of a speech. Let's put him out there to put another. So Obama is beginning to shift to the left a little bit on these kind of bread and butter issues. And the Occupy movement is making it a little bit okay for him to do so. So I think you're going to see Obama reposition himself. Mitt Romney is certainly a formidable candidate at this time of high unemployment and economic uncertainty. But I think his corporate background also makes him vulnerable because people are resentful. And I think the Obama campaign is going to tap into that resentment and try and once again make Obama, restore hope in him as an agent of social change.
Well, we might even come out of the year with a bit of more hope than we came into it then. That's all for this week. You can read more about all of these stories on our website at guardian.co.uk. And our thanks to Jonathan Friedland, to Martin Kettle and to Susan Goldenberg. The producer of the podcast was Ian Chambers. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks very much for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.